So we'll see what the governor has to say. She will have some good news to report on. That is, the state deficit, once thought to be $3.2 billion with a B dollars, is now down to only $1 billion, or a little less. Now, that's still a lot of money, but the important thing for our radio listeners is, if you've got a billion-dollar deficit, that's more manageable. Severe cuts to state services are probably not going to happen. The governor will still put in a pitch for two things, to mask up, and two, federal government send us some money to reduce the impact on our services here.
So Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirky can talk about that. But did you cut a check, Mike, or what's going on? How did it go from $3 billion to $1?
Well, that's the magic, Greg. Good morning to you, by the way.
The magic, Greg.
Of printing money and extending the deficit federally for our future generations, and sending, you know, buckets of money out to states, you know, basically with no obligations assigned to them. And additionally, we did a very good job of responsibly using what was sent out and making sure that we filled the holes and provided the necessary precautions and necessary support structures as we finished up this current year's budget. But really, if you just take a look at it, it's federal money, in particular, the $600 unemployment bonus per week for upwards of 10 to 12 weeks for folks that, you know, may have been only furloughed for one day, but that they still qualified for that $600, and people are spending it. That's the good news. People are spending it. I'm not surprised that there's an increase in sale of motorhomes and trailers and travel trailers, and just that people are reevaluating how they vacation, and they're, you know, choosing to do it individually instead of going to, you know, large events. And obviously, they're not going to hotels and motels as often as they used to. Look at the revenue at the Detroit, at the Mackinac Bridge, and how it's fallen off because of all the dramatic shutdowns in the Upper Peninsula. So it is better news than we expected, and what was projected in May. We appreciate that fact, and we know that the effects on the budget will not be as dramatic as we had once been concerned, but nobody should view this as we're out of the woods, for certain.
So some good news, certainly regarding the budget, Art. Most of the economy, I think it's fair to say most everything is open, but not everything. Can we get everything open?
Well, Greg, not everything is open to its fullest extent. There's lots of things that are open in a restricted way, but there's very little that's open to its fullest extent. And then, of course, we get these nagging little things that I think are precious and important part of our culture and our livelihoods, and those are, you know, things like gyms and workout facilities and theaters and bowling centers and things like that. That, you know, if you take a look at the data, you take a look at the precautions and the change in systems that these folks have implemented to make sure they're safe, and
right,
compare them for a moment to things like casinos, they're at the very least as safe as casinos are, and maybe even safer. And Michigan, you know, our governor likes to tout us as being an outlier in a positive way. Well, we're also an outlier in many negative ways. One is unemployment. One is that there's only, I think there's only one other state that doesn't have its gyms and bowling centers open across the nation. And so, you know, that's not something that I would particularly want to highlight. I'm hoping that in today's conference, she says she begins to open the lid on those enterprises. There's been a lot of pressure put on her over the last couple of weeks regarding these last remaining vestiges of overreaction to what I think was, the COVID. But, you know, we'll see what happens when her press conference comes along.
Mike, are you worried here about, we saw Central Michigan had a real spike in positive cases. So over the past week, they had about 100, and boy, up there, the way they don't social distance, that could rapidly be transmitted. Is that worrisome? Or
I share the governor's skepticism that some universities and colleges and and institutions will get it right,
uh-huh.
and others may not be as disciplined as necessary and again get it wrong. But I also would suggest that, you know, there's 84 cases, I think, on the Central Michigan campus. How they respond to those 84 is equally as important as that 84 number is. It's a manageable number, and if people get disciplined, they can manage through that. And that is all a result of how disciplined the entire institution is. There are examples going on across our state where different universities are employing different methodologies and different types of restrictions. And we'll see after a few weeks which ones are successful and which ones aren't. But that's how we should operate in America and in Michigan. We should not assume that government is so darn smart that we know what to do in every case. We need to let people make good decisions and then react when necessary.
So is anything else happening, Mike, besides COVID-19?
Well, COVID-19 is the shadow of all shadows across all of our activities, and it affects every judgment we make.
Right.
But there's a lot of activity going on in education reform and criminal justice reform. I think there's going to be a flurry of activity in both of those areas when we get back into a cadence starting week after next in the legislative session. And then, of course, we've got all the schools starting up this week. And next week will be a big peak, and the week after Labor Day will be the final big peak of schools opening up, and we'll be closely watching those that are doing it well and succeeding, and those that may have some trouble and will have to adjust. We were very careful to ensuring that schools had enough certainty and clarity of how they're going to be funded and guidelines, but allowed them to have plenty of latitude as to how they would open up. And I think I hold out very high hopes and expectations that the schools in Jackson County will outperform most of the schools in the state of Michigan.
Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirky with us. Mike, have you talked to many teachers? The ones I've talked to are, I think it would be fair to say they're pretty nervous about the whole thing.
I have. I spent a lot of time talking to teachers and principals. Throughout the last, last 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mixed bag. I completely stipulate it's a mixed bag. But I am proud of those that have decided that, you know, their jobs are really important, just like other jobs in Michigan are, to keep our economy going. And they've had great input as to how the structures and the systems and policies have been set up. And again, we will stand by and watch and be ready to respond if needed, but I think for the most part they'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm. So we started up this week. Are you pretty happy with the way things have started?
Well, so, you know, knock on wood,
yeah.
So far so good. Like I said, I have high expectations and hopes that the entirety of the schools, particularly in Jackson County, because they work so well together and they learn from each other so quickly, that we'll have good positive results here. There'll be some flare-ups, and we need to be prepared for those. I caution everybody, including your listeners, that a data point is a data point. It's not necessarily information. And so when something happens and there's a data point that looks unusual or looks even troublesome, it deserves the attention necessary to evaluate what it really means, but we have to be cautious about not overreacting. And I think that's what we've experienced in spades over the last few months here in Michigan. When we were starting to see an increase in number of cases, it was coincidental with almost a tripling of the amount of testing that we're doing on a daily basis. You can only conclude you're going to find more cases if you're doubling or tripling the number of testing that you're doing. And that's, frankly, doubling and tripling the number of tests we are capable of doing is a very good thing. And the last remaining thing that would help all of us get more confident and more comfortable is not a vaccine. Vaccine will come, but that's not what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It is quick results from tests. We can start getting very, very quick results from tests, and I think that's where the next constraint that's worthy of attention is what are the constraints that are preventing us from having, test results in measured in minutes and hours, not half days and days and a half. So that's where, from a health policy standpoint, we're also focusing on that.
The big test certainly will be if we get a flare-up, right?
Well, define for me what you would conclude to be a flare-up, Greg.
Probably just if a couple kids get the COVID-19, whether there's panic or not.
Well, right. So you and I can't control whether there's panic or not. That was what I was talking about a moment ago, about being very careful about not overreacting to pieces of data which
right.
have not been converted yet to information. If a school is structured, for instance, let's just stay on the topic of schools, and they're essentially keeping cohorts of kids together throughout the day,
right.
and there's a flare-up, and then that cohort, of course, will require certain attention, but it doesn't necessarily translate to the entire school. And that's the uniqueness of the different kinds of models that are being deployed. It also demonstrates the importance of when there are occasions when the different cohorts within the school are, you know, passing in the hallway or loading or unloading on buses and stuff, that people are paying attention to the big three, you know, sanitation, distancing, and wearing masks. And so it, again, I sound like a broken record here, but there will be cases where there'll be positive cases flare up, and we will have to evaluate those on a one-by-one basis. And depending upon what the model is that's being deployed at that particular location, will determine whether it's a widespread reaction or a narrowly focused reaction. And that's why I'm cautioning people to not to overreact too quickly to a piece of data.
And then we're running into flu season. That's just a couple weeks out.
Speaking of flu season, I've been reviewing some data most recently, and it looks like there was a trend or a change in how COVID deaths were recorded back in early June, and they included flu and pneumonia in the aggregation of deaths. And I'm looking into that. I'm not overreacting yet. I'm not making any assumptions yet. But if they, in fact, were deaths that were related, that totaled the three of those categories, and you subtracted out what our normal routine number of flu and pneumonia deaths were on a year-by-year basis, then the number of deaths from COVID would be dramatically reduced. And so I'm carefully looking at that and seeing if there's anything that any information there that needs to be gleaned that affects how we judge things. But make no mistake, COVID is here. It is highly infectious.
Yeah,
it's not a death sentence. But that all the more reason why you need to stay healthy and properly rest, and also eat the right kinds of foods that keep your body's immune system to its optimum peak performance. And then social distancing, I think, is the best of all three. And we've proven we can do that, and we will continue to do so.
Well, get your crystal ball out. Will we be bowling tomorrow?
In today's world, bowling, most bowling people bring their own shoes, their own balls. You know, they don't take the things off the racks. That's mostly recreational stuff versus league kind of stuff.
Right.
And so I would hope that the governor would open up bowling centers for league activity. And even if they wanted to reduce the number of lanes, that's a good start to prove that they have the protocols in place to, you know, provide a safe environment for people to start using them. And it's important. I mean, it's not like life and death, and it's not like putting food on the table, but some of our folks, particularly in this area, who really loved, I used to love the bowl. I mean, I was a very avid bowler when I was in my 20s, 30s, and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
It's a part of our livelihoods. And so I'm hoping that with those considerations that I just laid out, that this afternoon we'll see some cracking in that cap that's been put on top of that bottle.
Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey. Mike, as always, we appreciate the visit.
And Greg, I'm glad to hear your voice this morning.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.
All right, bye.
Mike Shirkey on WKHM.